We've known about mercury in fish for a long time now, so when some fish-eating birds turned out to be poisoned by mercury, no one questioned why. But what about those birds that don't eat fish? Dr. David Evers, executive director of the Biodiversity Research Institute, conducted tests that revealed some birds that don't eat fish also have mercury in their bodies. We've invited him on our show to find out how that could have happened and its implications. Dr. Evers is the adjunct professor of biology and the adjunct senior scientist at the Maine Center for Toxicology and Environmental Health at the University of Southern Maine. I'm very pleased to welcome him to our show. Hi.
Hi, it's good to be here. Thank you.
So how do you test birds for mercury poisoning?
Well, the best way of testing birds, at least in a non-lethal way, is to look at the mercury in their bloodstream. And that gives me an idea of how much mercury is in their body that could be toxic to them.
Because there are certain acceptable levels?
Yes, I think, you know, if we looked at these songbirds or other birds or even us 1,000 or 2,000 years ago, we would still see mercury in our bloodstream because mercury is omnipresent in the environment. It's just the levels that are out there now are historically quite high.
How does it affect the birds? Are there any noticeable symptoms?
Well, that's something I'm still studying on with songbirds. I also do studies on loons, a fish-eating bird, and loons do have impacts from mercury, and the impacts result in birds not incubating their eggs properly because mercury is a neurotoxin, so it changes their behavior.
But what led you to even think about testing songbirds?
Well, that's a good question. It is a very novel sort of approach, and I guess one idea is that all of us think in boxes, even scientists, and it makes a lot of sense for methylmercury, the toxic form of mercury, to be a problem in aquatic systems because it builds up in fish. And then fish-eating birds and us eat fish, and we can have problems from there. In the insect food web, I think those changes in methylmercury concentrations as they go up the food web can be just as great. And it's simply thinking a spider eating a fly is the same as a largemouth bass eating a perch eating that fly. So the same sort of changes in the toxicity of methylmercury up the food chain looks like that can still happen in an insect food web and impact songbirds.
And in the case of songbirds, we're talking about relatively small creatures.
Mm-hmm.
So even a small amount of mercury can have a major effect?
Well, yes. I think that's the toxicity part of methylmercury that's fairly well understood now. And I think just a little bit of mercury goes a very, very long way, and methylmercury is one of the more toxic substances on Earth. So it's not something that you want to get in your body in any sort of form.
You said that you're not sure exactly what it does to them. What about their immune systems? I would assume mercury, as I know with humans, can have a serious effect, as you said, on the nervous system and also even on our ability to think.
Mm-hmm.
Birds, as I understand it, or turn out to be a lot smarter than anyone thought.
Mm-hmm.
What effect has it had on the behavior of the songbirds?
Well, it is very new research, and so I think those are the sort of questions I have myself. And ideally, obviously, if we could ask the birds questions, we could get these answers very quickly, and we can't do that, so we have to observe their behaviors over time. And because their behaviors can be impacted by weather and predation and other factors, it gets to be a very difficult task to figure out, is mercury indeed impacting a bird that you're observing?
When you decided to test songbirds, did others question your reasons?
Well, many, many years ago, yes. And the first songbirds I started looking at were the big-nosed thrush, and that was maybe 6 or 7 years ago. So some of the songbird work is very new, and it's exciting information because it obviously shows that there are other pathways of methylmercury that can harm wildlife. Now there's many researchers that are looking at the potential impacts of mercury on songbirds. So it is a field that is growing.
And how does it get into their food chain? You said insects, but how does it get into the insects' food chain?
I think the same way that it gets into the fish food chain is that there's bacteria that convert the inorganic mercury into a methyl form. And once that's in its methyl form, it can move up through the food web. So in a lake, that happens through plankton. And in a wetland or in a forest, that happens through other small microorganisms that build up to insects and then spiders, et cetera. So some of the spiders, for example, I think are probably the key hinge here in how mercury, methyl mercury, can become part of the a bird's system. And spider mercury levels can be very similar to fish mercury levels that we catch in lakes.
Does the kind of mercury tell us anything about its possible source?
Hopefully, eventually. At this point, attaching the sources of mercury using isotopes is one approach that people are using to figure out the mercury that's deposited on, let's say, a mountaintop comes from a certain source. I think we're a little bit away from that, but I think eventually there will be the technology there to do that.
But we're talking about methylmercury in this case, and most people assume that it comes from acid rain, or it's carried by acid rain.
Right, and you know, it's interesting you bring that up. I think mercury that we're all worried about is coming from the air, so it's atmospheric deposition, and it happens when it rains as well as when it doesn't rain. So there's a wet deposition component, and then there's a dry deposition component. So, and both are fairly equal. So even when it doesn't rain, there still is mercury coming down on the landscape. So in the state of New York, there's still mercury coming on those mountaintops. So I think that needs to be considered when we think of where the sources of mercury are from. And those same sources also create acid rain or sulfur deposition. And the interesting interaction here that I think is very important is that acid rain can acidify soils, and those soils actually become better places for the bacteria to convert methylmercury into a higher form. And at the same time, those soils also lose their calcium. And that is the big concern that I see for songbird conservation, is the songbirds, at a time when they're coming back to their breeding areas from their wintering grounds in South America, they need to get a lot of food to produce their eggs and raise their young. And the places that they're getting their food from, these acidic soils, are places where the mercury levels are higher, and at the same time, the calcium levels have been lowered, and they need the calcium for their eggs and their young. So they're kind of hit with a double whammy of high mercury and low calcium at a very important time.
My guest is Dr. David Evers, Executive Director of the Biodiversity Research Institute. He's an adjunct professor of biology and the adjunct senior scientist at the Maine Center for Toxicology and Environmental Health at the University of Southern Maine. Now, the acid rain or the mercury in the environment seems to be coming from coal-burning power plants, but doesn't New York have strong environmental laws?
It does. I think New York, alongside New England, have made considerable strides in removing mercury and sulfur from emissions. And the problem here is that other states in other regions of the country and even other areas of the world are still producing enough mercury and sulfur into the airstream that can eventually fall out into New York and New England and still cause problems.
So Ohio, let's say, is poisoning New York's songbirds?
Yes, that is a possibility, and that is directly in the crosshairs of some of this research that I'm conducting right now, is to try to determine if there is indeed a linkage with coal-burning facilities and other sources of mercury that are west of New York and New England.
Can the birds just adjust their migration patterns and avoid places with high mercury toxicity?
Well, I think they could. I think migration patterns are hardwired into a lot of birds. There is some adaptive and flexibility and adaptive qualities. But the migration, it may not be as much of a concern as it is the breeding areas. And the breeding areas of some of these birds, such as the wood thrush in New York, are areas that I think we're all interested in seeing wood thrushes in our backyard. And it happens that in the Adirondack Mountains, in the last 20 years, wood thrushes have nearly disappeared from the entire Adirondack Mountain Park. And I think that's a cause of concern for a lot of people that are concerned for birds, but also people that are concerned of the environment, the ecosystems.
Because they were natural to that area and they've moved on to somewhere else.
Yes, well, I think moved on or have disappeared. The production of young by wood thrushes in the Adirondacks has not been enough to replace the wood thrushes that have disappeared. And so what happens is the individuals don't necessarily move on. What happens is the production of young fails year in, year out, and you end up with a large area with that lacks in wood thrushes.
Now, if the wood thrush has high levels of mercury in it, does it also contaminate the environment it's in?
Well, interesting. I think it can contaminate the organisms that eat it, such as hawks and owls.
Mm-hmm.
I think the mercury in that bird, once that bird dies, does go back into the ecosystem, and that mercury is regenerated back into the food stream or just sinks into the soils. So in some ways, sure.
Is there any way of knowing how long these birds have been affected by mercury poisoning?
There is. I think the mercury and sulfur deposition across New York has happened for decades, and there has been great strides in reducing those levels, but the levels are still high enough potentially to cause problems. And then there is a legacy effect that I think that we're still dealing with as conservationists and trying to determine what were the impacts and are those impacts still happening.
There was an article in today's New York Times about people at the FDA, scientists at the FDA being concerned about the FDA allowing certain chemicals to be in use in insecticides, mm-hmm. and fertilizers, chemicals that they thought were harmful to children, although the FDA administrators say that's not true. Would they also have an impact on birds, or are birds poisoned by different things than humans are?
Well, I think birds can be poisoned from different things from people, and both birds can be great indicators of poisons to people as well. I think there's a lot of pesticides that have been shown to cause great harm to birds. The whole issue about DDT was one that was brought up because of birds. And my guess is that there's still pesticides out there that do considerable harm to birds.
If New York has laws that actually are supposed to protect us against more mercury being polluting us, how does it then deal with the fact that other states don't have similar laws? Is there any kind of a federal program that's been proposed?
There is a federal program. It's a rule that the U.S. EPA has put together. It's called a cap-and-trade rule, and that is put together in hopes to reduce and minimize mercury emissions and the impact of mercury on the environment. There's some states like New York and states in New England that have more aggressive rules and laws that they have put in place as well. And one way of approaching other states in the region is to approach those states from a regional standpoint. And there's certain groups called the New England Governors and Eastern Canadian Premiers that represent a much larger region than just one state or one province. And they can approach other states and put pressures on those states to do something more.
Now, we haven't been hearing as much about mercury poisoning in fish. Does that mean that we've brought down the problem to some degree?
Well, I think the good news is that mercury levels in fish are declining in some areas, and it just shows that people can make a difference. There's a lot less mercury in the air masses of New England and New York because New England and New York have been very rigorous in controlling their mercury. I think there are a lot of lakes still that have mercury levels in fish where people shouldn't be eating them, and there's still problems in the ocean as well. So I think we're not completely over the hump yet, and there's still problems that need to be faced.
If there's mercury in the environment, what does that mean for our water supply, for example? Because our reservoirs are huge expanses of water.
Mm-hmm.
Are they being contaminated?
They are receiving mercury levels. Mercury concentrations from watersheds and directly from the atmosphere. The good news with mercury and methylmercury is that methylmercury has to build up through the food web to become toxic. It has to build up through the food web to have levels high enough that are a cause of concern. So the levels in water are very, very low. so low that there's rarely a concern of drinking the water with that has methylmercury and mercury in it.
But you're more concerned about its impact on biodiversity. If the songbirds have high levels of mercury and they die off or they move away, then everything else changes in the environment.
Yes, I think that's a very real concern. I think it's a concern for these birds and other organisms, the biological diversity that they provide, and as well as they can be a great indicator for our own interests in these sort of environments. And if the wood thrush is starting to disappear from the Adirondacks, what species is next?
And what is that going to mean for the Adirondacks?
Well, one bird missing from an ecosystem is a very difficult thing to measure, but it is widely accepted that if enough species start to become missing from a certain area, that the structure and the function of the ecosystems in that area start to also be impacted as well. And so, for example, if wood thrushes are very important in eating bugs from trees, and those bugs cause harm to those trees, they actually strip off the leaves from those trees, then those bugs may do better without wood thrushes, strip more of the leaves, and the canopy of that forest changes enough where the forest layer, the bottom layer, becomes hotter, and it changes the whole structure of the community.
Is it likely that chickens and other poultry that we eat, especially free range, are also being poisoned by mercury?
Likely not. It gets back to the same idea that there does need to be this biomagnification of methylmercury through the food web. Now, if chickens are free ranging and eating spiders all day, every day, then there could be a concern. But the chickens, many chickens, eat feed and seed. And a lot of the food items that they do have are low in mercury. And so there is not enough methylmercury to move up to that chicken to cause a problem.
I've been talking with Dr. David Evers, Executive Director of the Biodiversity Research Institute, and also an adjunct professor of biology and the adjunct senior scientist at the Maine Center for Toxicology and Environmental Health. That's at the University of Southern Maine. But he has been studying songbirds in New York State and come up with some shocking results. Thank you so much for sharing them with us.
You're welcome.